Good evening, and welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on Building Bridges, big step taken toward opening unionized Maquiladora factory in El Salvador. And remember NAFTA? Well, now there may be CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, and we're going to learn more about that from the fight against it in the U.S. and El Salvador later on Building Bridges.
But first...
Passenger power, here they come. International loan sharks, backed by the guns of market-hungry military profiteers, whose word is a swamp and whose brow is smeared with the blood of the poor. Paying countries into labor camps, modern slavers.
Paralleling its war on the world, the U.S. government is conducting a war on its own workforce. Recently, the House of Representatives has rubber-stamped a plan proposed by Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, giving himself and his managers almost complete control over the way 750,000 civilian workers in the Defense Department are hired, paid, promoted, and disciplined. He would, in effect, become the potentate of payroll in a system reminiscent of the 19th century spoil system of patronage and cronyism.
This is only the most recent battle in the war on federal workers, which President Bush began last year. His new Department of Homeland Security removed union protection from over 150,000 federal workers in the newly created department. The right to organize was also removed from the 60,000 newly federalized airport screeners and a host of other federal workers. And last November, the Bush administration announced plans to put 850,000 federal jobs up for bids for privatization.
While there are over 2 million federal workers throughout the country, this massive assault on worker rights has received little attention. Renee Toback, an economist who is a federal government employee, talked about Bush's union-busting campaign at the Brecht Forum in New York City recently.
Kiss the ladies, shake hands with the fellows, and it's open for business like a cheap bordello, and they call it democracy, and they call it democracy, and they call it democracy.
It's long been a goal of the right to limit the role of government, and part of limiting the role of government has always been tax cuts so that you strap government so they can't spend. But this administration has taken this idea of setting the market loose on formerly government functions, has taken it to a whole new level. At this point, we should know that government workers are the most unionized segment of the American labor market. 37.5% of government workers belong to unions. Private sector workers, only 8.5% belong to unions. It works out so that there are almost as many unionized public workers as unionized private workers. 7.4 million unionized government workers and 8.8 in the private sector. And 42% of the public sector workforce is represented by unions, because in the public sector you do not have to join the union that represents you. So you can be a non-union person in a unionized workforce still receiving the benefits. So I think it's no accident that the attempts to contract out public work have been accelerated exponentially. And let me tell you what's happened. There's something called the FAIR Act, which has to do with the gains through privatization of government work. And it used to be that there was a group of work that was considered inherently governmental and a group that was considered commercial in nature. The commercial in nature could be contracted out. It is now supposed, until proven otherwise, that all government work is not inherently governmental and can be contracted out. So every year, each segment, each job title, and each agency has to submit rationale for why they should not be subjected to the FAIR Act. Everybody who doesn't come under this, then the contracts go out for public bid, and your job is on the line. The standards are very hazy. The need for cost comparisons are very hazy. The contract specifications are very hazy. And what happens is then you spend an incredible amount of time trying to save government jobs. So far, government mailrooms are largely run private sector. Many information technology and computer services are run by private contractors. And we just defeated an attempt to contract out tax collection work. There was a scheme which had a lot of support, and we narrowly defeated it, to pay private contractors 25% of the take for collecting taxes. And these are the taxes that are in arrears, the hardest to collect, because instead of hiring new government employees to collect the taxes, they're just letting this build up of uncollected taxes, and they wanted to hire a private contractor. Now, after we went through a whole rigmarole in 98 about the alleged abuses of the IRS in being overly forceful, which incidentally there were very few that were actually proven, now they want to go out and give people an actual monetary incentive because the contractor would be reimbursed based on the amount of tax collected. That was very narrow, that was defeated, and now if you want to do a good deed, you can write to your congressperson and tell them to support the Van Hollings Act. Chris Van Hollings is a Democrat from Maryland, and he has introduced a resolution to say that paying private contractors for collecting of tax returns is inherently a bad idea, and that this would be inherently government work to collect taxes. The Defense Department is the latest department under attack. As you know from the Homeland Security Administration, all of those workers, their union rights are in jeopardy. It's not entirely clear whether they've been completely deunionized yet, but within a year we will know whether they will lose all rights to representation. None of the new workers moved into the Homeland Security will have the right to unionize, and that includes the inspectors at airports that used to be private, and where there were several unionization attempts in the works, they are now forbidden from joining a union. However, that is being challenged in a couple of places. Because according to President Bush and the rest of his administration, unionized workers are a threat to national security. Absolutely, is what he said. They don't provide enough flexibility in hours, flexibility in wages, flexibility in dismissals. We know that government workers do not get laid off as rapidly in downturns as private sector workers because there are a lot of civil service protections. Well, most of these civil service protections are now under attack, starting with deunionization, going through to this concept of pay banding, where you will not be assigned a pay raise and get automatic yearly or every other year or every 5 year increases based on the amount of seniority you have. You will be able to be promoted based on your evaluation by your manager. They've already implemented this in several areas of the government for management, but they're still in the process. They have to negotiate the impact of this with the federal employee unions. So that's lagging a little bit behind. Now there's a proposal to take the civilian workers of the Defense Department and forbid them unionization, for the purposes of national security, of course, to give more flexibility in discipline, more flexibility in pay scales, to reward people better for the work they do is what the line is. But what they mean is to not reward people for the work they do and to have more flexibility in firing and so forth. Now, all of this is in spite of the past experience with contractors. In 96, 97, there was another attempt, a pilot, on contracting out the tax collection. It was such a miserable failure, it had to be stopped after the first half year or so. It wasn't even completed the trial of the 1 year. And the next trial had to be canceled. They had the Mellon Bank processing tax returns. They lost 70,000 tax documents and $1.2 billion worth of checks. They lost them or destroyed them. We know how good it was when they had privatization of the airport security. That had to be federalized by a very anti-public sector administration. So the situation really for public sector workers is pretty desperate. We are, every day there's a new piece of mischief being stirred up. Much of what the labor movement fought for in the first 100, 150 years is under attack. I mean, and it's part of the whole Bush administration's idea of turning the clock back. So it's another part of the whole unraveling of the capital labor accord, where at this point, just increase the work week, decrease unionization, and essentially destroy anything left of the labor movement.
Of course, it's not only federal government workers who are under attack. The public sector, one of the last bastions of strength and growth left to a declining union movement, is under heavy attack on the federal, state, and local level, while federal tax cuts subsidize the already wealthy. State and local government workers join their counterparts in the private sector, contributing to the already high 6.1% unemployment rate nationwide.
What's surprising in all this is the AFL-CIO's leadership, headed by John Swinney, who came into power promising an aggressive campaign to reverse union decline, is so subdued. Even his predecessor, Lane Kirkland, would have sponsored a massive national demonstration or two by now. While massive labor protests over downsizing are rocking countries all over the world, U.S. labor is invisible.
Well, we are now switching gears, and we're going to look at El Salvador, the turning point, or is it at a turning point, with one of our favorite, and I think one of the most important, labor organizers in this city. Omar Enriquez is the Immigration Campaign Coordinator of SEIU, Service Employees International Union, and recently returned from a Labor Council trip for Latin American Advancement to El Salvador, and welcome back.
Thank you very much for those words. I really appreciate
Omar,
it.
Omar, what was the occasion that this trip to El Salvador, this delegation actually from the FFL-CIO, what brought them down to El Salvador at this point?
Well, it was a combination of the Latin American Latin Council for Latin American Advancement of the FFL-CIO in conjunction with the FFL-CIO, and basically what we went to do there was to strengthen the solidarity between the unions and voice our opposition to the CAFTA agreements as it stands.
Wait a minute, NAFTA?
Now CAFTA and
what is? I missed that one. CAFTA.
It's Central American Trade
Free
Agreement.
Free Trade Agreement.
You didn't know about that one
Not
either.
Not until I
Ken.
Talked to Omar. No. I mean, it's just been well, recently been talked about.
Well,
this is brand
this
new.
This is one of the things that we talk about and discuss. That in El Salvador, there was a 10-month strike to try to stop the privatization of the healthcare system in El Salvador, and very few people knew about it. Even in our own community, people didn't know that there was a strike going on for 9 months. People knew more about the illegal strike about Venezuela than the strike, the workers, the heroic strike, and the workers in El Salvador was taking place. So this just tells you how much they put it under the rug.
And I believe you also, talking about El Salvador, we also have Gilberto Ernesto Garcia, the executive coordinator for the Center for Labor Studies and Support in El Salvador, with us on the line.
And and he has a great story of success in terms of labor struggles in Central America.
Hola, Gilberto.
Hola. Hello.
Maybe you can...
Hello, it has no translation.
Well, maybe you can help us with exactly the story that you were talking about, Omar.
Well, Gilberto, ¿por qué no se explicas la lucha que se logró en El Salvador en términos de la maquiladora?
Sí. Bueno, en primer lugar, agradecer esta oportunidad de hablar desde aquí de El Salvador en una radio de Nueva York.
It's just thankful to be able to speak from El Salvador to a New York radio station.
And us as well. It's a pleasure to have him.
Un placer de tenerte aquí.
Gracias. Bueno, en el año 2000 empezó una campaña de organización en una fábrica taiwanesa.
In the year 2000, an organizing campaign started in a Taiwan-owned maquiladora in El Salvador.
Esta campaña de organización, pues, empezó y, en primer lugar, como una lucha por algunos problemas que se daban.
That organizing campaign started from very specific issues such as, dale.
Condiciones de trabajo que no eran apropiadas.
Conditions at work, safety and health.
Malos tratos, algunas agresiones que se venían dando contra las personas que trabajaban ahí.
Even beatings to workers that labored there.
El sindicato que empezó a organizar esa campaña es el STIT, el Sindicato de Trabajadores de Industrias Textiles.
The union that started the organizing drive is the STIS, which is the textile union, the textile unions of El Salvador.
Inicialmente, pues, fue una lucha también por problemas que se dieron en el marco de los terremotos de enero del 2001.
And initially, it was also surrounding the earthquakes that took place in February 2001 with and its devastating effects.
Los trabajadores se negaban a laborar en medio de la planta que había sido dañada en alguna medida por el terremoto de enero.
Workers were refusing to work in the plants that were damaged by the earthquake.
Y dos líderes del sindicato, pues, apoyaron esa reclamo de los trabajadores, ¿verdad? En ese momento no eran líderes del sindicato.
And some that later became union leaders supported the proposal of not working in those conditions.
Y la empresa les despidió.
And the response was they got fired by the company.
Pero después los trabajadores dentro de la empresa y, como todos sabemos, en su mayoría mujeres empezaron a luchar, ¿verdad?, para lograr la reincorporación, llevaron el tema al nivel internacional.
But the workers responded, and as you know, the majority, he has to point out that the majority of the workers are women, and the women took on their own to try to fight to have their compañeros, their workers, being reinstated, and they started looking for international solidarity and help.
Eso logró que se reincorporaran 9 meses después, a finales del año 2001, en diciembre, esos dos líderes.
And after, in December 2001, 9 months after they were fired, they were able to reinstate the workers back in the company.
La lucha por ese reinstalo también permitió al sindicato crecer mucho en su afiliación dentro de la fábrica, que tenía 540 trabajadores.
That experience helped the future organizing because the workers saw that they could achieve something. ¿Y cuántos trabajadores dice?
540.
And the membership grew up to 540 members.
Y para abril de 2002, ¿verdad? And for ellos presentaron la solicitud de negociar el contrato colectivo a la empresa.
And in April of 2002, they finally presented a collective agreement. It was to negotiate with the company.
Cuando ellos habían alcanzado más de la mitad más uno de las afiliaciones de los trabajadores.
When they had the cards, signed cards, more than half on 1%,
La solicitud fue presentada un día viernes. El día lunes 26 de abril, la empresa anunció por todos los periódicos que iba a cerrar operaciones.
Application was submitted on Friday. ¿Cuál fecha? Abril 26, ¿no?
Abril 26.
26 of April. And el mismo día fue o el siguiente día.
No, el día lunes.
On Friday. Mm-hmm. And on Monday, the company announced that it was going to close operations.
Sin platicar con el sindicato, sino que anunciándolo a los medios de comunicación.
And they arbitrarily announced it to the media without consulting the union or anything that they were going to close that shop.
Y en aquel momento, pues, inició una campaña en la cual también muchos sindicatos de Estados Unidos nos apoyaron.
And then we started a campaign, a countrywide campaign, and also international campaign, in which some locals from the United States helped out.
Seal y Steve empezamos a pelear aquí en El Salvador por exigiendo una reapertura de la fábrica.
So we began to fight for the reopening of the company.
y la FLCIO y UNITE básicamente nos ayudaron a articular una campaña internacional en Estados Unidos y en Asia.
With the assistance of FLCIO and UNITE, we began an international campaign to have this company open again.
Seis trabajadoras de STIP fueron a hicieron diferentes giras en la famosa campaña de GAP del año pasado.
And six workers from union members, they did a tour, the famous GAP tour that went around the country, six workers from the Maquilas.
Y esa campaña logró atraer mucha atención de los consumidores, de los estudiantes, de las personas del ámbito laboral.
And that campaign brought the attention and allies from the students, other locals, other unions, and people in general.
Y también de gente del ámbito político. 14 congresistas escribieron a GAP solicitándole que ayudara a resolver el problema.
And also some political actions, because 14 Congress people from the United States signed letters that were sent to GAP.
I don't think that people really necessarily realize that this is an incredible development. It's the first Maquila area where there's a collective bargaining agreement a union that's almost unheard of in any of the maquilas, which are set up across Latin America, Mexico. It is a remarkable development.
Or even with the United States has agreements like such as Singapore and Guatemala, where they have agreements, but they don't allow the organization or the formation of unions. Ella está diciendo que es interesante y increíble de que en El Salvador se esté dando este desarrollo porque hay un sindicato en una maquiladora.
Correcto. Es el primero que solicitó negociación colectiva en la industria de la maquila.
It is the first one in the maquila industry that has done collective bargaining with a company.
So, but as I understand it, the customers, people like Gap and other clothing distributors rather, in the U.S. and throughout the world, now have to buy from this company, which is called Just Garments.
Lo que él dice de que sí es cierto que las compañías tales como Gap y las otras ahora tienen que tener contratos con ustedes.
Bueno, eso es lo que estamos pidiendo, ¿verdad? Gap ahora se ha comprometido.
That's what we asking, and Gap has committed.
A llevar producción a la nueva empresa que se llama Just Garment.
To give orders of production to Just Garment, which is the name of the maquiladora.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Dale.
Continúa.
A pesar que se firmó el acuerdo de reapertura en noviembre, tuvimos del año 2002, tuvimos muchos problemas para ejecutarlo y para abrir la empresa.
Even though there was an order of to have the company open up a business, we had difficulties in getting that done. It was, ¿hasta cuándo lo hicieron?
Bueno, hasta hace algunas horas, pues, finalmente llegó la maquinaria.
This is amazing. This is also historic. This is also historic, because he's saying that just 2 hours ago, they were able to finally get the machines so they could start production. So he says about 2 hours ago, that's when the agreement came down. And when they have they could actually say, we have the machine.
Well, talking about world-breaking
stories. And I feel like we should have some celebration music now.
Oh, definitely.
Dice que debemos tener música de celebración.
Sí, sí. Hasta cuando terminemos de descargar los containers.
But he's saying that we got to unload the containers. We have the machines, but we have to unload it from the containers.
You know, unfortunately, we haven't been able to really examine all the issues relevant, Omar, to your trip to El Salvador and even this very important development. Perhaps you would come back.
I will love very much to do that.
I'd love to have you back.
Because I'd really like to explain what took place, and we had our high-level meetings. And as it stands right now, the CAFTA agreement is not going to work for the Central American region.
Well, we have to find out a lot more about CAFTA, a lot more about our friends. Of course, the elections are coming up in El Salvador, and I understand, which is extremely good, that the right-wing popularity is at an extreme low, which is also very encouraging, but we've just about run out of time, so maybe you can thank our very wonderful guest and tell him we're going to get back to him, if that's okay, in the
Gilberto,
next couple of weeks.
Estaba diciendo de que ese es un tema muy amplio e interesante para cubrirlo en el poco tiempo que teníamos, y que la próxima semana va a haber un levantamiento de fondos aquí en la emisora, pero que en la próxima nos llamaría tanto a ti para ti para que elaboremos más en los sucesos que están pasando, no solo en el CAFTA, pero en particular con la maquiladora que tú y los trabajadores heroicamente están representando.
So again, we congratulations, buena suerte, Gilberto Ernesto García, Executive Coordinator for El Centro de Estudios y Apoyo Laboral, which is the Center for Labor Studies and Support in El Salvador, and Omar Enriquez, Immigration Campaign Coordinator. We've got to find out a lot more about that in the weeks that come, from SEIU, and recently returned very recently from El Salvador.
And one of the things that Omar is also working on is the Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride, which you'll hear a lot more about on this station, and I don't have the time to tell you too much about it now. But
and if you want to get in touch with Building Bridges, you can get a call or email Mimi at buildingbridgesonline.org. And again, Omar Enriquez, as always, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Muchas gracias, y la lucha continúa.
De nada. La lucha continúa. And for Mimi Rosenberg,
Ken Nash, Building Bridges, tune in next week.
Have a good evening.
The shield is home. So, if you ever find yourself out of strength, in need of help, know that hope is just a prayer away.